Just a reminder, today's conference is being recorded.
We are all one. He has, then he says, who you are? He says, I am Mr. Jan, I am Mr. Khan, I am Mr. Singh, I am such and such. Whenever more further impressions come into himself, then he says, I am a Christian, I am a Hindu, I am a Mohammedan, you see. I am an Indian, I am a Russian, I am American. Just see how far he has receded from the consciousness which a little child has. So it is the consciousness that we are. We are conscious entities. And that to be withdrawn from all outside and know ourselves so that we can run the machinery of the man body in outside world whenever we like. If not, we can withdraw from there. So such men, their bodies appear to be in the world, but their souls are in mouthpiece of God, contact with God. Their bodies appear to be entangled in the worldly affairs day and night, but whenever they want, they rise above body consciousness and travel into the beyond. That's the difference. As I told you this morning, with the average man and the one who has succeeded that way, is vast difference. We are at the mercy of the outgoing faculties and enjoyment. We are dragged like anything, whether we wish it or not. But one who has, with the grace of some adept in the body, he has given him a demonstration as to how to rise above body consciousness, he rises above the outgoing faculty. The seat of the soul is at the back of the eyes. And all outgoing faculties have their place below, ears, eyes, nose, down. These five decades, lust, anger, greed, taste, and touch, they have got their centers to work. Lust attacks from the eyes, through the eyes. Anger has a boost when you hear. Taste through the tongue and smell through the nose. So these, those who have just competent to have their feet there at the back of the body, at the back of the eyes, he is competent to use any of the in fact, that is will and pleasure. So this is what the difference between the average man and the other man. So religions, I told you, that were raised with a very noble purpose so that many people may derive benefit therefrom by joining it. So long as they are practical people, people derive the full benefit of that. For want of them, the same formations raised with noble purpose stagnated. Further deterioration came up. Masters, they come from time to time when they see this plight of the world, they say, dear children, know that who you are. Again they revive that very thought, which is the basic teachings of all masters. And they bring home these things to them. Now soul, as I told you, is of the same essence as that of God. God is all consciousness and soul is conscious entity. So physically, you see, we are all one, with equal privilege from God. As soul, we are also of the same essence as that of God. We are all children of God. We are all brothers and sisters in God. And the power that we worship as God, has got so, by so many names, is the same, which is controlling all universe and controlling us in the body too. So as man, as soul, as whom we worship, we are all already one. The unity exists, but we have forgot. That's how the limitless people pray God, bearing different labels on the man body. But to whom they bow down? To God, who is the controlling power of all creation. First they have to know themselves. So like archers, you see, there may be many archers, but the point target is the same always. Whether you have the outer labels of one religion or the other, that show in which school, what is the school of thought you are taken up to solve the mystery of life. This is basic teachings given by all masters in their own language, of course. That school is better, is appreciated, from which many students come out successful. Not that whose buildings are very grand, whose playing grounds are very beautiful, whose dresses of students are very magnificent, but where from many turn out, get highest degrees. So as I told you, all this plight came up for want of practical people. So masters always tell us what they bring us. They say first of all that they are the maker of all this universe. He also made your body in the womb of the mother. So, Master said the same thing. They say, love God and all those whom God has created. So all scriptures, when you see, look through them, they enjoin this thing. God is love. And love is God. Tenth Guru says, hear ye all, lend me your ears, I tell you the truth, whether you bear the labels of one school or the other, the way back to God is also through love. God is love and love is innate in our souls. Now, instead of that love being had a boost by coming in contact with all love, which is controlling us in the body, that being attached to the outside things, which is termed attachment. Love knows giving, and attachment means squeezing, dragging something, usurping something for one's own self. Vast difference between the two. So they bring the religion of love. Kabir also, all masters I say, Kabir says, well, love thy man body is the only golden opportunity in which you can love God. How? When you are brought in contact with God, which is controlling you in the body, the outer expression of which is light and sun. So if someone, we have got love for the world, which is called attachment, that's the reason we go where we are most attached. In man body, we could have contacted God within us, which is all love. Had that become the ruling passion, then naturally after that we would have gone to the lap of the Father. The reason of our coming again and again, ever since we were separated from God, we have not yet been successful to go back to our home. So all Master tell us like that. All those who are on the spiritual way, St. Paul said, what you should serve one another with love. Blessed one who serves his fellow man is the true lover of God. So one and all, you see, Taylor said, he, in his poem, he prays best who loves best. St. John also saying, he that loveth not God, loveth not God. One and all. Bible says so, love thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy things, and love thy neighbor as thyself. So all masters who came before, that man God also desires that the controlling power keep it in the body, and we also, the children of God, in the same body. If we torment anybody, how can we know God? We want to meet God. But the love God residing in man's body and his children residing also there, you're tormenting them, you're squeezing their blood, how can God be met with you? So Free says, torment not anybody if you care to love God, to see God, to meet God. One devotee prayed God, oh God, just would you kindly pay a visit to my home? He said, yes, I will come. He made all preparations, cleaned his house, laid down the bed of roses for God to come. He also cleaned clothes and sat at the door outside, waiting for God to come. From morn till night, he was there. And God did not come. One old man did come who could not walk properly. He was asking, I am hungry, will you kindly give me a loaf of bread? He passed by. At night, devotee prayed, God, you promised to come to my house and you have not come, because I did come. I was asking for a loaf of bread from you, and you did not give it. Unless our inner eyes open to see God in everybody, to see his children, we are all brothers and sisters in God, we cannot know God. So love is the main thing in all affairs. That's good to say. God is in the whole world, and world is in him. If you tease anybody, you torment anybody, mind that God will take, he will punish you for that. So truth remains, when God wanted to be many, there was light. And that light is the cause of all creation that resides in every heart. That light we have to come to know. We are all children of light. So light take care that the light within you is not darkness. You see? So light is there. So love knows service and sacrifice. Whom you love, you want to give everything to him. Love knows giving, as I told you. And attachment wants everything to your own self. That's the vast difference between the two. Kabir says, so long you are in the body, in Punjabi language, body is called a day. And day word means also to give. He says, so long as you are in the body, give, give and give. Man is one who lives for others. Animals live for their own self and for those who are his children. If we behave the same way, how can we be better than the animals? One poet says, look to the face of the animal, it is just like facing the earth. If that remains all too earthly, that is all right. But God made man's face upward. Look upward. Rise above this physical body. So now, you see, this body is the true temple of God, in which we reside and also God resides. Your temples, which are made outside, they are made out of the model of man's body, dome-shaped. You see, in that they put in the symbol of God made out of stone, some gods. In Mecca, you see, you have kept there the quarry kept by Khalilullah Ibrahim. That's the remembrance of that prophet. And these are made symbols kept there for the love of God, for remembrance of God. They are both equal. Now the one queries, which is better of the two? Both are kept with the same symbols. The temple has the same light, the mosque has the same light, the church has the same light, all holy places have the same light. Which is better of all of them? That's the only symbol kept there in sweet remembrance of God. Such light is which is seen as the outer expression of God. So he replies, he is better of the two in whom that light is effulgent. That is, light is radiating. That is better of all these. So masters tell us, you see, in all religions, you know the highest degree which we are supposed to have is to know God, and the degree is given for a Sikh who becomes a Khalsa. And definition is given to see the great conflagration of light of God. Only he is Khalsa, not that who is bearing the label of that ism, but who sees inner eyes open to see the light of God. A Hindu is one, truly speaking, when the light which is makes outside in worship and other things, or in the temples he goes and lights the best candles. He is not the true Hindu, he is the true one who lights that candle within, which is already there. Kabir says, there is one lamp burning within you without candle, without the wick and without the aisle. We are the children of light, take it that the light within you is not darkened. So this all master tell us. So differences are there. These are man-made. One truth is working at the basis of all religions, of all master teachings. Whether he is a believer in God or not, both ways, these differences came up as a result of our own whims, excuse me if I say. One rishi stood up with the, what you say, result that it's all God. Our soul is also God, fully. Then the other came up, the follower Shankara, Ramanuja, he said, there is still covering up of what you say. They are covering on the body. This is physical, this is astral, I mean, there are pranas, there are manomay, there are conscious, I mean, intellectual, and there is speech and jive. Still it is a sacrament. So when they went on, when they saw that very expression radiating through a man's body, he said he is above all. So these all differences are due to them. They came up. Why? On account of narrow-mindedness and bigotry. As also due to climatic influences or customs prevailing. I may give you one or two examples to show that in Arab there's dearth of water. Prophet Muhammad came up. He saw that the water is very less, the dearth of water here. He said, all right, when you can wash your hands, feet and face, that is sufficient to say the prayer of God, prayer. When there was no water whatsoever, then he said, he had a custom, you see, tayammum. That is, besmear your hands and feet with the earth and sit for prayer. In the countries where water is in abundance, they say, unless you take a bath, you cannot say, your prayer is not accepted. So this difference is due to the climatic influence. Means when you sit for prayer, for the sweet memories of God, you sit wide awake, not sleeping. In the Christian churches, you find to sit bareheaded is a sign of respect. If you go to the Sikh temples, they think that the sit head with covered head, this is a sign of respect. So difference is about the customs prevailing. Those both mean the same thing, to sit respectful. You follow my point? So on account of narrow-mindedness and bigotry and custom prevailing and climatic influences, these differences are there. And these are man-made. So temples, as I told you, true temples is man's body, in which the light of God is effulgent. You see, all these temples have two aspects. When God wanted, I want it to be many. So ringing radiation came out of that. The two aspects of light and sound are the outward expressions of the existence of God. So they have made tables out of the man body, dome-shaped, and put in light and sound. Simple there. In churches, no shape, they put in light and sound, visible there. In churches, when you go, light, they lit the light already lighting, and the bell is going on ringing already. In the Hindu temple you go, those who enter, they light the candle and also ring the bell themselves who enter. So these are only men, you see, two symbols kept in the outer temples and churches, etc., to show that such like light and such like sound is within you, reverberating. Oh man, you see it from outside, I am a hidden treasure within you, why don't you find me? This is Quran says. All others also say, there are treasures of divinity within you, why not dig it up? One Bhukha saint says, in the world there is nobody hungry. Only this knot of the physical and our soul being under the control of mind and outward faculties is in it. If we don't know how to unravel it. That is why we cannot find him. The God is within us. We are seeking outside. How can we succeed? So all masters lay much stress on that. They say, body is the temple of God. If you want to find him, you will find him only within you, which is the controlling power. Now, outer religions aim at what? Their preparation of the ground, I would say. Man is a social being. He must have some social body to live in. So they teach us to have a life of ethical life. In all religions, you say, although their outer forms and rituals are different, but they all enjoin what is true life. Truth is above all and true living is above truth. So we have kept this man body outwardly very clean, but we should keep the hearts also pure. We spend thousands of dollars for the outer cleanliness, but what we have done to clean our hearts? Blessed is the heart that are pure at heart, for they shall see God. Whose mind is defiled, and whole everything is defiled. Whose mind is pure, everything is pure. If you keep a filthy cloth or anything, bad odor to come out and fill the whole atmosphere of the room. So we should look after people are after outer cleanliness, they should have the inner cleanliness. If they want that God who is already there, He will manifest His form, His appears, make manifest when their heart is pure. So all masters say it like that. So spirituality, what it is, actually speaking now. The world religion also means the same thing. They don't mean the outer isms or the social body that we are carrying, that's right. The world religion means, re means back, leisure to bind. To withdraw our attention from all outside and bind with the God over self. This is called religion. This is called truly speaking spirituality. Word yoga also comes from the root, yuj. That is to bind back our soul back to God. So, what is the highest religion in the world then? Outer forms, they are. Master, don't touch them because there are already so many, more than 700 already. So that is the first step we have taken. But for the purpose for which we have taken, we should see that. Khalsa is one who sees the light of God. A Hindu is the one who sees the light of God. A Mohammedan also sees, who sees the light of God. And Christian also the same, who sees the light of God. That's the highest degree. So which is better and which is of the two? So that man body is blessed. From it, that radiance, ring radiance, is radiated. So, the highest religion is what? What Guru Nanak defines, we are all children of God. We are reading in one class, bearing different labels as the body. Purpose is the same, to know God. The ultimate goal is to have right way of living. Our livelihood should be earned by sweat of brow. Our lives should be pure. And to know God. See, that all masters who came the past, they had the same teaching underlying. Guru Arjan broke the ice, I would say. The scriptures of various masters you will find in their own books alone. But in the sixth scripture, which was compiled by Guru Arjan, he compiled as many masters' sayings as he could lay hands on in one volume. That is to mean the whole object was to unite all mankind in the silken bounds of love and not create schism. That is what the master always do. they come to unite, not to disunite. The whole purpose of, they bring the religion of love to mankind. They say, who created you have love for that. Whatever has been created by him also have love for that. It is told that Moses was passing by in the wilderness. There is one shepherd praying God, oh God, if you were hungry, I would have given the milk of the sheep today. Oh God, if you felt I was cold, I would have just worn the wool of the sheep and given you, made a coat to, for you to wear on. You were going like that. And Moses passed by, are you heretic? What are you talking? Can God drink your milk? He was sitting in love of God. To love, no, I bounce. God looks to the heart from which those words are coming. He began to cry, oh God, I have displeased you. And while crying, he went into within. And God appeared, well, look here, I'll also drink your milk. I'll also wear your clothes. And then Moses, when he came back, sat in meditation inside, God appeared to him, told him, look here, I have sent to you to unite those who are not united with me, not those who are united to break away from me. Go and ask for forgiveness, you know. So love knows service and sacrifice. Love knows giving. And only we know, I am not talked out about a letter I gave in the morning about meditation. Tomorrow I will submit to you what these masters give. The third talk I will again give you, that God resides within you. How skip to maintain it. So my point is, you see, if we know how to give to others, then everybody will be happy. So master's way is sometimes to give direct talk and sometimes by means of parables. Christ also did that. It is said in the Puranas that Vishnu, the Lord of maintenance, invited all gods and those ushers, they are not gods, gave them a feast. The feast was served, food was served, and the gods also took their place, sat down, and the others also went down. And Lord Vishnu stood up, said, look here, gentlemen, all this food for you. Eat to your heart's content. But my one condition should be observed. And what is that? Don't bend your elbows to eat the food. Those who are not gods, they thought over it, they said, stay here now. If we do not move our elbows, how can we eat food? They could not come. They left this place in disgust. Told that Lord Vishnu had played a mockery. And the other two gods sat down. He said, these are the words of Lord Vishnu. Must be something at the bottom. For a while they came, it struck them, well, it is very easy. Let others make others eat. Why bend it? But let yours remain as it is. Let others eat. The result was, everybody ate. Why we are unhappy? We want to make ourselves happy at the cost of others. We want to be wealthy at the cost of others. We won't let anybody die of hunger. We will never die of hunger. If we see other men rich, then you will also become rich. So giving, you see, love knows giving, and sacrifice also is necessary. So this is the religion, outer religion, I would say, which masters who came from time to time to guide the child humanity and the inner way.
Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Satsang from Master Kirpal Singh. Before we start, I should mention if you need to turn the volume up, you can press star 4. You can press it several times and the volume will continue to go up. And also you can press star 7 to bring the volume back down. Okay, this morning our reader is Leslie McIntosh. Are you there, Leslie?
Good morning, John, yes.
Okay, carry on.
Thank you. This morning's satsang, Master Satsang, is going to be the reading from The Night is a Jungle, the second half of Chapter 12. To gain his pleasure. We'll begin Master Satsang with his invocation. Supreme Lord of the Universe, who dwells neither in church nor temple, neither in synagogue nor mosque, but who is the soul of our very soul, we invoke your blessings from the depths of our innermost being. Beloved Master, make us simple, pure, and strong in your all-encompassing love, that all beings may look upon us and see your light shining within us. Holy Word of God, bathe us in the living waters of spirituality. Give us union with the eternal song of the Lord and strengthen our faith in the Master within. These things we do ask in your holy name. Amen. The Night is a Jungle, Chapter 12, To Gain His Pleasure. In the West, many sects have sprung up which deal with suggestion, hypnotism, mesmerism, and other doctrines which are not spirituality. Spirituality is purely a matter of self-analysis, knowing oneself and knowing God, the demonstration of which is given at the time of initiation. Many are doubtful of this science in the beginning, but I tell them to see with their own eyes, for there is no greater proof. In the past, the subject was very vague, for masters agreed to give the experience only after long years of study when one was fully prepared. Today, it can be seen immediately what spirituality is. What a magnificent blessing. Brothers, this is the Guru's court. He is doling out this gift. Eat, drink, and be merry. You should eat, drink, and enjoy, for you are getting this gift free. There are no charges. Even if you spend all life in penance, you will not get this thing that way. Only one man was to be found in King Janak's age who was God realized. That was Ashtavakra. Today, can you find thousands? In the past, there were few, and even now there are few, but the world is not without them. Make the most of the good fortune, for blessed are they who have received this rare gift. I have become the Lord of this physical form, and have tied up the 5 devils. Masters have no ego. They always acknowledge in humility that everything is achieved with the Guru's grace. Why shouldn't he gain full control over his mind and senses, who has all love for his Guru alone? He says he has become Lord of the house, and he has captured the 5 thieves, lust, anger, greed, attachment, and ego. Who can make such a statement? Only with the Guru's strength can anyone declare so boldly. O Sadguru, when I came to thy feet, these five strange aliens came under my control. He was pleased, and I was blessed with his grace. Now they cannot revolt or raise their heads. The five senses of action and knowledge are foreign to our nature. They must be overpowered and placed under our orders instead of vice versa. When that happens, they have no courage to stand and defy us, and they will not obey. Can anyone affirm such a staggering statement? People say that saints and Mahatmas do not assert themselves, but they do speak directly. If they do not give the information of what to get and how to get it, where would we begin to seek for the truth? They tell us that there is such a wonderful nectar inside that will intoxicate the soul. They themselves are intoxicated. Their mind and senses are completely controlled. Their eyes are open, but they do not see. Their ears are open, but they do not hear, if they choose not to. They are the controllers of all the senses. With whose power is this achieved? With the grace of their respective gurus. When one gets the Nam's inner nectar, all worldly intoxicants seem ridiculous. And when the seed of Nam sprouts, all outer things become meaningless. All glory and beauty lies within you. You will forget outer things and their false attraction. The five devils will come under perfect control and will have no courage to jeer at you. There is so much nectar within that even they become intoxicated. O Sadguru, again and again I glorify thee. With each breath I think of thee. There was a certain intoxicated lover of Bhik Sahib who constantly repeated, O Bhik, O Bhik, for he saw God clearly in his guru. His contemporaries condemned him as an atheist and passed judgment for his execution, but they could not execute him without the king's authorization, so they brought him before the king. It is possible that this king was Akbar the Great, who was renowned for his keen sense of justice. When the king looked at the accused man, and he said, I feel he is an intoxicated holy man. And he asked him, Who is your God? The man replied, Bhik. The king then asked, What is your religion? And he said, Bhik. At this, the king ordered that he should be released. His accusers protested that he would run away, but the king said, It does not matter. He then looked keenly at the holy man and told him, For a long time we have been without rain, and if it does not come soon, there will be famine in the land. So could you please ask your Bhik to send the rain? The man replied, Oh yes, I will ask him to send the rain. Only complete faith in the Guru could display such calm confidence. He who has not experienced the true inner connection with his Guru will not have such strong faith, for faith is built on knowledge. When the holy man turned to leave, the king asked him when he would return, and he answered, On the third day I will return. The very next day, there was such a heavy downpour of rain that the whole countryside was flooded. And on the third day, the holy man returned to the king's palace. The king smiled at him and said, Your guru was very gracious to send to us in sending the much-needed rain. I am giving you these precious gifts. Please place them before your Beek Sahib as my thankful offering. The devotee got very indignant, saying, "These perishable things for my guru? Most decidedly not. Such people care nothing for the world and its possessions. I have brought life to this derelict house, body. I could sacrifice myself in gratitude." Gratitude is a very rare virtue. Because of friends and relatives, we even risk our guru's displeasure. And this is due to lack of gratitude and faith. We sometimes consider the guru to be less able than an ordinary man. With this type of outlook, what can we hope to achieve in progress? The worldly things are more beloved. Guru and God are accepted casually for whatever can be derived through them materially. The attitude is one of tolerant duty, with respects paid in a condescending manner. Man always thinks he is the greatest of all, but if he really became great, he would not be in this blind, egotistic state. I am in perpetual dhyan, contemplation, with my beloved. The fruit comes to him whose attention pierces through the veil. If you completely surrender unto him, then nature itself will be at your beck and call. All your desires will be fulfilled. Guru Amar Das Ji says, "O mind, you once desired 1,000 things, but did not get one. Now see that each thought will be fulfilled." All the work has been resolved and the mind's hunger satisfied. What else can I desire from you but you? All else is misery upon misery. Give the Nam, which renders all fulfilled and takes away the hunger of the mind. I have abandoned everything and am a true servant of the Lord. He who surrenders to the Lord lives without worries, doing the work sincerely and truthfully, and leaving all else to the Guru. That Nam, giver of all happiness, has been tied to me. Nam is the sustainer of all things. He who has Nam has got everything. During one of my visits to America, an initiate meeting, an intimate meeting was arranged with a group of scientists. One man asked many questions and obviously strongly doubted the subject of spirituality. After some discussion, I asked him if science had succeeded in creating even 1 ounce of consciousness. He said no. I then explained to him that the pursuit of science must necessarily remain in the domain of matter, whereas all the teachings and knowledge of the saints lie in the domain of consciousness. There were a number of disciples present at this meeting, and they were of the opinion that this gentleman would not turn up on the morrow, which was chosen for the initiation program. But he was the first to arrive, and he got the most experience. So this is a path of awareness, the path of perfect masters, and you may accept it as their mercy, or due to their greatness, that they have made such a difficult achievement into a child's play. Were it not for this fact, the seeker would require a great background of past lives and then many years of study in preparation for this path. So Guru Arjan advises us to eat, drink, and enjoy what we have got, for this is the precious time, and the rain may not fall forever. I am the most content of all. The Guru has established the shop within me. He is encouraging us to have some longing for a thing of which we have no conception of the value. All the wealth is lying in the disciple's father's home. And for whom is it but for his own child? The most obedient child will naturally receive the most. Whatever the Guru has got, he considers not his own. And the more he gives freely, the greater the flow. Eat, drink, and enjoy to the fullest while you have the opportunity. Sadhguru, the Lord, placed his hand on my head and manifested God within me. His greatness is proven when he actually shows the way, even without the physical gesture of placing the hand on the head. By his grace alone do we rise above body consciousness and see the light within. He is the giver, comparable to none other. I have opened a true Dharmanshala, footnote, in India, a common place for rest for travelers erected in the name of righteousness, and have gathered the true seekers there. A blind man cannot seek one with sight, but one who can see can gather the blind together. Christ told us of the sheep he had to find and take care of. Man is helpless with merely his own efforts to assist him. Sincere seekers will find that all will be arranged and made possible without them doing anything. Even before I arrived in America, there were people who knew nothing about me who were seeing the Master's form and also Baba Salwan Singh Ji within. When they saw me physically, they told me that they had been seeing me within for months, some for a year or more. Brothers, it is all his work, not mine. During my first world tour, on the way back to India, I agreed to pay an unarranged impromptu visit to Germany. Someone who was accompanying me remarked, "But how will those people recognize you? For they have never seen you." In other countries, at least the program was prepared. "Even if they recognize you by your clothes, how will you know them?" I replied, "He who is sending me there will make all the arrangements. Why should I worry? He will himself arrange all to receive me." When the plane landed in Germany, there was a small crowd awaiting me, and each person had a rose in his hand. I said, "You see, there is my reception." They came running toward us, asking about the luggage and telling us that the cars were ready and waiting. So he himself does his own work. The commission comes from the Lord, and he works through whomsoever he chooses, be it one or thousands. I wash his feet and fan him. Again and again, I express my thankfulness for finding him. A true guru never says he is a guru, but in all humility will serve whoever goes to him, for he comes to serve humanity and to give something to the world. When he comes, the entire world gets the benefit of his light. I got Nam, Dawn, Alms, and Ashnan, Bath. The Guru gives us the Nam, which you should know is the sustainer of the entire creation. Contact with Nam, the nectar of the Lord, creates true love in us. And as love knows only giving, the disciple himself becomes a giver. He is born to serve and to give himself to the world. While he is in the physical form, he will give. When the physical form is no longer there, who can ask from him? And who will come to take? He starts to give everything, physically, materially, and eventually he gives the mind. Having become the controller of the mind, he serves humanity with unending joy. Nanak with the Nam rises in continual heights of glory. Peace be unto the world, under thy will, O Lord. The Master serves all humanity with his goodwill, physically, mentally, and even outwardly, in all manner of ways, making use of whatever outer knowledge he has acquired in his lifetime to help the people to understand the truth. The bath that the Guru gives in the holy waters of Nam will purify the mind and senses from all evil. These three things, Nam, Dhan, and Ashnan, are gained by sitting at his feet. Unfortunately, people think that by Ashnan, bath, is meant an outer bath to clean the body. Though it behooves man to keep the temple of the Lord clean, the inner cleanliness is vitally more important, and that is the work of Nam. One of the clearest criteria that can be observed in a true master is that he is always sacrificing himself for the sake of others. He knows how to give and give only, not to take. He is a giver, not a beggar. If the guru starts taking, then what will we give? He has no thought of business, but gives this priceless jewel as a free gift of nature. In many countries, they take up collections to pay the lectures and the expenses of arrangements, etc. When I was traveling in America, I gave free talks without charges, collection, or need of buying tickets. One day while I was giving a talk on God and man, a man stood up. He was a Russian and offered $5,000 to me. I told him, "Look here, I have not come to collect dollars. What I have gained at the feet of my master is a free gift of nature and must therefore be given freely." The people were at first surprised and then overjoyed at this. Through this very principle, the praises of true masters are being sung all over the world. I am receiving invitations from America, Europe, the Far East, Australasia, the Middle East and Africa, and they state that they have heard of the gift which is being given to all. Dear brothers, who am I to give it? The giver is giving it, with his grace, and with the grace of all the past masters, the great past masters, for whom, forgive me, we have not enough respect, I am sorry to say. All are being freed, O Nanak, on the boat of truth. Day and night there is awakening in the world. All listen with open ears to praises sung in thy name. When the Master comes, the world begins to awake, and hearing his words, they wonder, "What is this new thing which is entering our very being?" During my tours abroad, many talks were given in churches. They rarely allow outsiders to speak in the church, Yet they welcomed me, for they said that these teachings are as given in the Bible. One minister went so far as to say, I have been in charge of a Presbyterian church for 40 years, but today, for the first time, I have understood what the Bible is telling me. He came and bowed to me in front of everyone with tears in his eyes. I want to point out that all glory and praise be to those past masters who have given us these teachings. Now orders have come from the gracious one, through which all pain and misery will vanish. They are at peace, for through the Nam they have gained true humility. Initiation into the holy Nam is a panacea for all ills, and the repetition of Nam brings peace and true humility. He who sees the truth in all its glory will be full of humility. St. Augustine says, there are three ways of realizing God. The first is humility, the second humility, and the third humility. In the courts of the masters, humility reigns supreme, for true humbleness is the adornment of a true saint. They are ruler and controller of this great power, and yet they never show pride or vanity, giving small indications of what they are, and yet saying, it is His grace. The Amrit is drizzling down. His words are those of the Lord Himself. Remember that water collects on the lower levels. When the cup of humility is ready, then the inner Amrit will fill it to the brim. Some people say doubtfully, how can you say these things are true? The masters explain that whatever words come from the true master's mouth are words from God Himself. In faith, I rely on you. You yourself will do everything for me. All is the Lord's work. What is it to me if the world blossoms or perishes? My work is but to be a tool in your hand, to do what you will. With your mercy alone is the world gaining. With your mercy alone is the world gaining any benefit. With your wealth, the world is prosperous. A time like this may never come again. We are encouraged to eat, drink, and enjoy the blessings pouring out from the Lord. Your devotees have but one desire, and that is you. A true Guru Mukh will have desire for God alone, so much so that he should become thee, and thee become me, and no one should say there is any difference. Hafiz Sahib says, I should become you, and you should become me. I am the body, and you should be the life, that no one may say that I am one thing and you are something else. There is some slight difference in the wording, but both masters have given exactly the same meaning. O giver of peace, reveal thyself to me. Clasp me to thy breast. Allow that I may never be separated even for a second. It is the true disciple's constant wish that he may never be separated from his guru. It is a great blessing to have a living master, an even greater blessing to be near him. The bath taken from his glance of mercy is a flow of truth which cleanses deep through the being. The devoted disciple sheds tears at the very memory of this. He who sees him outside and inside both gets some consolation during separation. However, he also cries out of love, for there is nothing more beloved for him than his master. The yearning of the heart pours out of the eyes, and there are no words to describe this condition. I searched in the world, above the world, below the world, but could not find one like you. How can there be another like the Sadguru? Only a Sadguru can be the same as a Sadguru. Do you know the story of Sukhdev, son of Maharishi Ved Vas? When Sukhdev wanted a perfect guru, his father told him that King Janak was the enlightened soul of that age. After that, Sukhdev went to King Janak's kingdom several times, but always returned without having seen the king. For he had the doubt in his heart that this king enjoys the pleasures of palace life with all of his queens, etc. How can he possibly give any enlightenment? Now Narad Muni, a powerful devotee of Lord Shiva, saw that this man was losing all his progress with each doubt he had about King Janak, the great soul. To save what little he had left, Narad Muni turned himself into a very old man, filled a basket full of mud, and began to pour the mud into a fast-flowing river, just as Sukhdev was passing by on his way once again to King Janak's kingdom. He saw the old man and asked him what he was doing. The old man replied, "I'm building a dam." Sukhdev laughed and said, "Have you no sense, you fool? Can you build a dam just by pouring mud into fast-flowing water? First, put some foundation of wood or rocks, and then put the mud." The old man replied, "I might be a fool, but I have only wasted one day. The biggest fool is Sukhdev, who has finished 9 of his merits of progress, and the 10th and last he is about to destroy by again doubting a perfect master." This encounter with Narad Muni shocked Sukhdev to his senses, and he went straight to King Janak's palace. He stood near the stables and sent a man to tell the king that Sukhdev has arrived. The king said, "Tell him to wait until I call him. Tell him to wait there until I call him." In strict obedience to the master's orders, Sukhdev stood on the same spot for the whole day and then all the next day. Sometime on the third day, he was called into the palace. Having stood there obediently in one place for so long, he had become covered in horse's dung up to his waist, for the grooms had been shoveling it into the corner where he stood. So he took a bath and changed his clothes and then presented himself to the king. As he came near the king, he saw that he was reclining on a couch with one foot resting on a red-hot iron plate. The other leg was being massaged with cool sandalwood paste by some of beautiful queens. It was very revealing to Sukhdev, and as he gazed in amazement, a man came running into the court and cried, "Your Majesty, the city is on fire." The king said, "It is God's will," and did not move an inch. After some time, another man entered the court and said, "Your Majesty, the palace is on fire now, and the flames are coming toward this room." The king replied, "It is God's will." When Sukhdev saw the flames and felt the heat, he picked up his stick and small bundle of belongings and prepared to rush out. But the king caught hold of him, saying, "You are a fine kind of world renouncer. My whole city has burned away. The flames have consumed my palace, and I merely said it was all God's will. But you in your panic are trying to save a stick and a bundle of clothes?" He then talked to Sukhdev for a long time, telling him, "You are a Brahmin and full of ego about it. You are also very proud of being the son of Vedvas. Doctors operate to remove morbid matter, and in this way, King Janak was removing the doubts and faults in the mind of Sukhdev." When Sukhdev Swami returned home after his initiation, His father asked him, "What is this guru like?" Sukhdev replied, "In brightness he is like the sun, although the sun has got heat and he has not. He has got the coolness of the moon, though the moon has shadows on it, and my guru has no shadow. A guru is a guru. The stories of the great masters are for people whose eyes are open. Otherwise, for instance, Guru Nanak was not permitted to enter the city of Khazur because the people, blinded by lack of understanding, declared he was an atheist and a bad influence. Wherever the truth works in full power, the negative power will also work in force, full force against it. He does not want his prisoners to escape his clutches, but regardless, the Satguru goes on distributing the wealth without concern. When I was small, about 12 or 13, I remember clearly that one day I read the life of Ramanuja. I was very fond of reading biographies. Now when Ramanuja was initiated by his guru, he immediately went and stood on a platform and collected a huge crowd around him. He shouted to them, "Today I've been initiated by my guru, and I'm going to tell you all about it." Some of the people were shocked and warned him, "Are you mad? You will go straight to hell for disobeying your guru." I was deeply impressed by his answer. He said, "I alone will go to hell, but so many of you will get salvation." Reading this, I vowed that if I ever get any spiritual wealth, I will give and give without hesitation. My master saw that I was a spendthrift, and that's why he gave me the work. It is all his grace. One of the initiates, an English lady, once met a Christian friar, and she asked him, "Have you ever seen the inner light?" He replied, "Yes, after 19 years of hard penance on Mount Sinai. On one occasion I saw some cloudy light, but very dim." She said, "Why, I see bright light daily." What value can we place on such a treasure as Nam? We do not seem to know how to respect it even. We get this precious thing and, having no value for it, do not keep it carefully. It is gained too easily and freely. The Western people have more respect for it. My first Western tour was 4 or 5 months only, and in this short time there was a grand awakening all over the Western Hemisphere. There was a genuine surge of seeking for truth, and when they got it, there was more respect for what they had been given. In India, we take it for granted. Christ said, "Take heed, therefore, that the light which is in you be not darkness." Introspect your deeds daily with the help of the spiritual diary and do not allow anything to cause you to forego your meditation. If you live like this, there will never be darkness within. Tragically, we do not care. We have no time for the most important work. If you had to die today, what would you do? Do not live in the illusion of thinking or believing that after death you will get something. If you have not made spiritual progress in this life, you will not be a spiritual person merely by going through the death change. Believe in the salvation of life. Do and see for yourself. If you do nothing, then how can your condition be helped? Each place is permeated with you. O Nanak, only true bhakti will make this apparent. The name of Prahlad is well known in the history of true devotees. He was ordered to wrap his arms around a red-hot iron column to test his faith in what he believed. Even the large crowd present at the time murmured, "Oh God," as he approached the column. But what did God do to preserve the faith of young Prince Prahlad? The prince saw a small ant running up the fiery column, and with joy in his heart, he leaned forward and clasped his arms around it. The column immediately split open, and out of it stepped Avatar Narsingh. I am illustrating that God is everywhere, but only those eye whose eye is open can see his glory in all things. True devotees have got his sustaining protection. Standing in the midst of thousands, they can be pillars of strength and faith. In the West, many intellectual people came to hear my talks, and not for one moment did I ever stop and wonder how they would receive my words. With great power, I would emphasize the teachings. It is all his grace, and he himself prepares everything. The trouble is that we forget that he is the doer and not I, and we do not keep our face turned toward him. Rather, we go on finding fault with him and are full of doubts. Like this, how will we grasp the help offered to us? In closing, Master says, each one of us is unique in his own way. There is a divine purpose behind the life of everyone who comes into the world. No one has been created for nothing. We have something to learn from everyone. This is the mystery of humility. Thank you, Master, for today's satsang.
Thank you, Leslie, for the wonderful reading. Today we had 72 people at the satsang. Thank you, everybody, for attending. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us. Now please hang up your phone.